This week we are learning Perek Ches in Yoshua, and as you recall from our last year, we had just described the disastrous consequences of Klal Yisrael's first effort to conquer the city of Ai. They suffered a humiliating, devastating defeat, and Kadosh Baruch Hu had revealed to Yoshua the reason for that was because Achan ben Carmi had taken from the forbidden spoils of Yericho, and we therefore described last year, the process by which they identified the perpetrator, namely Achan, and they put him to death. And now, in the aftermath of that process, we're now once again revisiting the battle and the attempt to conquer Ai. So now in Perek Ches, that's where we pick up, we are told in the opening pasuk, Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua, God says to Yehoshua, Al tira ve'al techas. Don't be afraid. And the Mefarshim wonder, why is it that once again God is telling Yeshua, don't be afraid? Hasn't the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Yeshua that numerous times already back in the first parak of the Sefer? Apparently, something has changed. Apparently, in the aftermath of what happened in last parak, now Yeshua once again is afraid of something and God has to reassure him. Don't be afraid. Rather, take with you Es Kol Am HaMelchama, the entire army this time. Unlike last time where they sent just a few thousand people thinking good enough, now Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, take the entire Am HaMelchama, the entire army with you, and go up against Ai. Re'ena Satib Yarcha, I am showing you that I am giving over to you the king of Ai, his people, his city, his land. And you will do to the city of Ai, you'll do to the king of Ai like you did to Yericho and to the king of Yericho. But this time, God says in Pasuk Beis, Rak shlala uvehemta tavoza lachem. This time, take the spoils, take the behema, the animals, for yourselves. And then God describes, very briefly, Sim lecha orev la'ir me'achareha. God instructs Yeshua, put an ambush behind the city. So rather than just a frontal attack, God tells Yeshua now, put an ambush behind the city. Now that might be, some of Farshim suggest, why Yeshua was afraid, or might have been afraid. Why is God telling me put an ambush behind the city? It sounds like all of a sudden now we've got to resort to all sorts of modern military strategies. We're fighting Bederech HaTeva now, it seems. We're no longer just going straight into the city of Ai, Bederech Neis. So perhaps, according to some Mefarshim, Yeshua was being told by God, don't be afraid, despite the fact that I'm going to now instruct you to put a siege behind the city, an ambush, I should say, behind the city, which is Derech HaTeva. Don't think that that means that Klal Yisrael has now dropped a madrega. No, there's a reason for that. Now, this is the explanation given by the Chidah in his Sefer Chumas Anach. The Chidah says that God was telling Yeshua, don't be afraid, despite the fact that I'm going to tell you now to put an ambush behind the city, which sounds like it's a Derech HaTeva battle. Don't be afraid. You're going to win. Don't be afraid. Now, another suggestion as to why God is instructing Yeshua, don't be afraid, an interesting suggestion also made by the Chidah, is the following. We know that the last battle was a disaster. Why? Because Achan took the spoils that he shouldn't have taken from the city of Yericho. If you look back carefully in Perek Vav of Yoshua, where is the first mention of the prohibition to take spoils from Yericho? The first mention back in Perek Vav is in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Pasuk there says, V'haysa ho'ir cherem. The city should be prohibited, should be declared holy. Hi b'chol ha'sheba. It and whatever is in it. That's the first reference in Perek Vav we find to this ban against taking spoils from Yericho. But who gave that ban? Who imposed that ban? You look back in Perek Vav, in Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayomer Yehoshua El Ha'am. That was Yehoshua's directive. Yehoshua declared the Cherem of Yericho. He declared the spoils of the city off limits. Yes, now, apparently God did accept Yehoshua's directive that the city should be off limits. That's why when Achan violated that directive, they suffered so terribly in battle. But it was Yeshua's initiative, says the Chidah, that brought about this prohibition to take from the spoils of Yericho. And in fact, Rashi in Perek Zion, when Yeshua falls on his face praying to God after the defeat in battle, Yeshua is begging Kadosh Baruch Hu, how could this be? In Perek Zion, in Pasuk Yud, so the Pesukim there describe, actually beginning with Pasuk Vav in Perek Zion, right after the defeat in battle, Yeshua tears his clothing, he falls to the floor, he puts dirt on his head, and he says to God, how could this be? Why'd you bring us over the Yarden to give us over to be destroyed? We should have stayed on the other side of the Yarden. What should I say now? We have fled in front of our enemies. The Kenani will hear about this. It will be a terrible Chil Hashem. Yeshua is very distraught. And God says in Pasuk Yud, in last week's Perek, Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua, Kumlach, get up. Lamazah tenofa panecha. Why are you on your floor, on your face? And Rashi there says something interesting. Rashi says, Kumlach. Rashi says that God was saying to Yeshua, Rashi says in one interpretation, Bishvilcha zos lahem. This is all your fault. Why is it your fault? Says Rashi, quoting the Gemara, that you are the one who imposed this ban on the spoils of the city. Who told you to declare the spoils of Yericho off limits? It was your initiative. This is all your fault. You set him up for the failure, so to speak. So Rashi there in Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud, interprets God's response to Yeshua, Kumlach, as if almost like blaming Yeshua. Lesson learned. Don't do this again. You should not have taken that initiative to impose the ban on the spoils and set up Klal Yisrael for failure. And in a different pshat, that same Rashi says, also along the same lines, Kumlach meaning, Yeshua, why didn't you go to battle with them? The first battle against Ai, they sent 3,000 soldiers. Where was Yeshua? He wasn't leading the charge. He was back home, taking it easy, so to speak. So God, Rashi tells us in Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud, criticizes Yeshua. I told you that you should bring Klal Yisrael into the country. You should lead them into battle. I told you that I'll be with you when you bring them in, when you take charge, when you take the lead. But what happened? You stayed behind. You sent these 3,000 soldiers to go fight Ai against the enemy themselves. You didn't go with them. So once again, it's your fault. You caused this defeat. So according to those two interpretations of Rashi in Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud, Kumlach implies that God was very subtly hinting in his response to Yeshua that this defeat in battle is in some way due to your misstep. You should have led them into battle. You should not have imposed this ban on the spoils of the city of Yericho without my saying so. You should not have taken that initiative. It's really your fault. So for those two reasons, says the Chida, maybe that's why Yeshua is afraid now. Oh no, I'm at fault. He's perhaps blaming himself now. God criticized me for my misstep, but now that means I'm liable. I'm responsible. It's my fault. So for that reason, says the Chida, God is reassuring Yeshua. Okay, mistakes were made, but don't be afraid. That doesn't mean that now all is lost. We're back on track now. We're going to put this back right. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. So it's also a beautiful lesson. Even a leader, according to Rashi's interpretation there, can make a mistake. And a person, when he makes a mistake, is sometimes inclined to blame themselves and feel the guilt of I'm responsible, and that's liable to get someone down in the dumps, and now they lose confidence, they lose courage, they lose the ability to keep on going. And God is telling Yeshua, okay, you made a mistake. Kumlach, get back up. Maybe it was your mistake to, on your own initiative, ban the taking of the spoils. Maybe it was your mistake not to lead them into battle, to stay back behind. But it's not a reason to now give up and to throw your hands up in the air and say, I can't do this anymore. Al tirav atachas, don't let it get you down. Don't be afraid. So that's a very beautiful Musar in terms of engaging in battle. And perhaps we can extend that idea to the notion of a spiritual battle. You know, we all make mistakes. We all sometimes have setbacks in our Avodas Hashem. And it's easy to throw our hands up and say, made a mistake, that's it, all is lost, forget it, I can't do this. And the Musar again here is that people make mistakes. Leaders make mistakes. Sometimes there are setbacks. Sometimes there are failures. Sometimes there are costly failures. But There is never a reason to give up. Al tirav al techas. Keep on going. Finally, one last perhaps suggestion as to why God has to stress al tirav al techas. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, in that famous shmuz that he gave during the Yom Kippur War in Yeshivas Mir, spoke about the critical efforts that must be made by Klal Yisrael in time of war. So he speaks there first of Torah, the schus of Torah, how important it is to learn, how important it is for women, the Gemara says, to encourage their children and their husbands to go learn as a schus in an eis tzara in a time of war. That's the Gemara Brachos that he cites on Daf Yud Zayin, that women have that schus of encouraging their husbands to go to the Beis Medrash and then waiting for them to come home so that they can learn. And he speaks there of the importance of tefillah, how important it is to daven for Klal Yisrael's success in battle. Specifically, he says, to daven for the soldiers who are being moser nefesh for Klal Yisrael. He writes there that the Gemara Bava Basra tells us on Daf Yud that the Haruge Lud, two individuals who literally gave their lives to the Romans to prevent the Romans from killing mass numbers of Jews, those Haruge Lud, says the Gemara, Ein adam yachol lamud b'mechitzasa. No one can share in their chelik of Gan Eden. Akedei kach. They're so highly respected in Shemayim. And Chaim Shlovitz writes that we have a chiv ad ein gvul. We have an unlimited obligation to daven for the soldiers who are fighting for Am Yisrael in a time of war. And then he writes that in addition to the Torah and in addition to the tefillah, it's usher to be afraid. You can't be afraid in battle. One has to have a strong sense of bitachon, and that sense of bitachon has to overcome any sense of fear. And so it could be very simply that this instruction by Kadosh Baruch Hu to Yeshua, Al Tirav Atechas, is simply what is being said in times of battle. Don't be afraid. You have to have bitachon. Don't be afraid. It's us to be afraid in times of battle. Okay, so the parak begins, therefore, with this instruction, Al Tirav Atechas, and God tells Yeshua, I want you now to set an ambush. But look at the phrase in Pasuk Beis, Simlacha Orev Lo'ir, an ambush to the city, which Malbim explains means sometimes an ambush is to ambush a group of people, to ambush an army. Now, sometimes you wait in hiding for a battalion of soldiers to walk by and you ambush them. That's not what's being said here. It's an Orev La'ir. It's an ambush for the city. As we'll soon see, the plan was, and Yeshua constructed this plan perhaps based on this understanding of God's instruction, Yeshua constructed a plan whereby he drew the residents of Ai out of the city, and then that detachment, that hidden ambush, then seized the city, set it on fire, and we'll soon see how that played out. But that, the Malbim says, is what the Pasuk here means by Simlacha Orev La'ir, set an ambush for the city. So Yeshua understands this, and we'll see how he goes about it. But the Pasuk says, Me'acharea, put the ambush behind the city. The Malbim says, if you can picture the map of Israel, and you have the Jordan River, and just to the left of that, to the west of that, is the city of Ai. A little further west is the city of Beit El. The gates of the city of Ai are facing north, says the Malbim. So the behind the city means south, the opposite, you know, the behind of the city. If the gates of the city are facing north, then the ambush to the city was to the south of the city. And the Malbim says, a little bit more precisely, the ambush that Yeshua puts to the city is to the southwest of the city of Ai. If you look now in the Pesukim, in Pasuk Gimel, Yeshua now stands up with all the Am HaMelchama, they prepare to go to Ai. Yeshua chooses 30,000 soldiers, and he sends them in the dark of night. Why in the dark of night? Because they're positioning themselves as an ambush behind the city. Well, if you're going to just walk on by marching 30,000 soldiers in the middle of the daylight, everyone's going to see you. So in the dark of night, he takes 30,000 soldiers, and they quietly walk all the way to the southwest of the city. They march to the southwest of the city in the dark of night, so they go unseen. And Yeshua tells them in Pasuk Dalid, you are Orvim La'ir. You are an ambush lying in wait for the city. Me'acharei ha'ir, behind the city. Again, Malbim says that means to the south of the city. Yeshua says, don't go too far from the city because an ambush has to be able to spring into action in the nick of time. So don't go too far from the city, but be prepared. Ve'yisem kulchem nechonim. And I and the rest of the nation, says Yeshua, we will approach the city, meaning, says the Malbim, from the north, directly in view of the opening gates, of the gates to the city. So we'll approach the city, and when they see us, they're going to come right out against us, like they did in the first battle, which we lost. And we will once again, says Yeshua, turn our backs and run. So they're going to essentially set a trap for the city of Ai, the residents of Ai, by pretending to once again be fleeing and retreating in fear, just like they did the first time around. And the soldiers and men of Ai are going to be emboldened by their previous success, and they're going to pursue the fleeing Jewish army who are north of the city. They're going to come right out against them. And Yeshua tells the ambush of 30,000 that we're going to draw the residents of Ai and the soldiers of Ai out of the city. And then when the city is now emptied of its soldiers and its defenders, then you will jump up from the south of the city and come quickly take the city and set it on fire, says Yeshua. And so in Pasuk Tes, we are told that Yeshua sends these 30,000 soldiers to lie in wait in ambush. The Pasuk says that they lie in wait between Beis El and Ai to the west of the city of Ai. Between Beis El and Ai to the west of the city of Ai. That means, says the Malbim, he suggests it means southwest. Southwest of the city of Ai. Not directly next to Beis El, because Beis El, we'll soon see, came to the defense of Ai and came to assist them in battle against the Jews. So they couldn't see this ambush either, clearly. And then the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Tes, Bayolen Yehoshua Balaila Hahu Besocha'am. Yeshua spends that night amongst the people, Besocha'am. Implying, if the Musar was given to him previously that you did not go with the soldiers to battle, he now is, I'm here with you. We're lying in wait to begin the war the next morning, I'm here with you. Now the truth is, they didn't begin the war the next morning. They first had to put themselves in position. He sent the ambush 2 days ahead of the war, 2 days before the war, to go lie in wait, give them a head start. And in Pasuk Yudaf, we're told that Pasuk Yud, we're told that Yeshua gets up early in the morning, he takes account of the people, he and the Zikna Yisrael walk before the people towards Ai. The entire army, says the Pasuk, is with him, approaching with him. They're going Neged here, and they're in full view of the gates of the city. As Malbim described, the gates of the city of Ai face north, so they're positioning themselves in full view. They want to be seen, clearly, by the people of Ai. They camp out, says the Pasuk, Mitzvon Ai, north of Ai. And there is this valley between them and the gates to the city of Ai. And then in Pasuk Yud Beis, very puzzling, unexpected development. Yeshua takes 5,000 other soldiers now. Now what's going on here? He already had his 30,000 soldiers sent to lie in wait in ambush to the southwest of the city. He now with the rest of the army is north of the city in full view of the city defenders. He now takes 5,000 additional soldiers and he also puts them as an ambush between Beis El and between Ai to the west of Ai. Now, didn't he already do that with the 30,000? What's he doing now with the 5,000? What's this additional 5,000 doing here? So, two interpretations. The Alshich suggests that the first ambush was a group of 30,000 soldiers. That's a huge mini army there. They could be too close to the city because there's so many of them, they'll give away their position. They've got to be further south from the city. But if they're too far south from the city, as we said before, they might not make it in time to the city when the order comes, take the city, burn it. Take them some time to get there. Furthermore, how are they going to know when that moment is to take the city? If they're so far south of the city, they can't see what's going on, how are they going to get the signal? Now it's time to take the city. So the 5,000 smaller detachment, says the Alshich, was put between the larger ambush and the city. Why? They'll be able to see a little more easily what's happening in the actual war when the time is right to move into the city. They'll be close enough to get a head start and jump into the city. And the bigger ambush group behind them will see them. When the 30,000 see the 5,000 run into action, they'll follow. That's the Alshich's understanding of the layout here. You have the main army to the north of the city, and then southwest of the city is the 5,000, and further southwest is the 30,000. That's the Alshich. The Malbim says, different shot. He says that no, the main army is north of the city. The ambush of 30,000 is southwest of the city. This additional smaller detachment of 5,000, yes, the Pasuk says it's put west of the city. That doesn't mean, says the Malbim, southwest. He already had an ambush group there. It means northwest, meaning, says the Malbim, imagine you're the city defenders looking north through your open gates. You see the main army right ahead of you. To the west of them, you would have seen the smaller 5,000 ambush group. So you think, ah, I've got it all figured out. The main army's here. The smaller detachment is there. It was almost like a decoy to completely distract them from the main ambush group that was southwest of them, which they never even bothered to look for. They thought they had it all figured out. The main army's here. The smaller detachment is over there. North, northwest. We got this down pat. They were completely were unaware of the main ambush group that was to the southwest of the city. That's how the Malbim understands the purpose of this additional 5,000 soldier detachment. And the Alshich, who understood this 5,000 strong detachment going to the southwest of the city, also suggests that maybe the added purpose in doing this was Yeshua didn't want the main army to look too imposing, too big. Because what's his goal? His goal is to essentially entice the defenders of Ai to come out of the city and to pursue the soldiers in the Jewish army. If the Jewish army looks too intimidating and too big, the defenders might be too afraid to come out and get them. We'll hunker down here and stay here, defensive positions. So Yeshua wants to, says the Alshich, decrease the size of his army to make it look less intimidating, make it more likely the defenders of Ai will come running out of their positions to attack the army. So to do that, he separates out 5,000 more. Let's cut down the numbers. Take 5,000 more, put them southwest of the city, make our own army look less intimidating and more likely to therefore entice the defenders of Ai to come out of the city and to pursue us, which is what happens. So now we have the ambush in place, and Pasuk Gimel, we are told that another night is spent before the actual battle begins. And this time, Pasuk Yudalid, the king of Ai sees the main army to the north of the city. So he and the soldiers of Ai quickly get up in the morning early. They rush out to greet the army of Israel in battle. And he has no clue, says the Pasuk, that there's another ambush lying in wait behind the city to the south. Sure enough, Pasuk Tezvav, Yoshua and his army flee towards the desert as if in retreat. And the entire city of Ai sounds the call, go get them, Pasuk Tes Zayin. They pursue Yoshua. They detach themselves from the city, such that, as we're told in Pasuk Yid Zayin, not one man remains neither in Ai nor in Beis El. Beis El also sees the action. We'll take part of this. This looks like fun. They also pursue the Jewish army, and they leave the city entirely open, says the Pasuk. And now, in Pasuk Yitches, okay, so the plan has been put into operation. It's remarkable. All God told Yeshua was, set up an ambush behind the city. And Yeshua somehow constructed this entire battle plan based on what God told him to do. And so now, in Pasuk Yitches, once this plan has been put into action, Pasuk Yitches, we are told, God tells Yeshua, Nete bakidon asher biyotcha la'ai. Take that spear in your hand and stretch it out towards Ai. What does this remind you of? Perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu battling Amalek in Parshas Beshalach with his hands outstretched in battle, supported by none other than Yeshua. Well, Yeshua was fighting the battle, but Kalev and Aaron and Hur supported his hands. But Yeshua was fighting the battle that time. But that same imagery almost of the outstretched arms in battle. So Yeshua stretches out his spear towards Ai, and by him doing so immediately, the Pasuk tells us that the ambush then, as they see him point the spear towards Ai, they leap into action. They take the city, they set it on fire. That's in Pasuk Yitzes. They understood the signal, and they leap into action. And now the Pasuk says, all of a sudden, in Pasuk Chaf, the soldiers of Ai turn around, they see they've been duped. Behind them, the city is in flames. There is a 30,000 strong soldier group behind them. There's the army in front of them. And now they have nowhere to go. They're sandwiched in between. The Jewish army turns around, starts pursuing the soldiers of Ai. They're caught in the middle. And the strategy works perfectly. Works perfectly. So now, Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Chaf Aleph that Yehoshua and all of Klal Yisrael see that the city is up in flames. They now are emboldened and encouraged to defeat the soldiers of Ai, which they do so. Not one survivor remains. They seize the king of Ai and Pasuk Chaf Gimel alive. They bring him to Yehoshua. And all the men, all the women, residents of Ai, 12,000 of them are wiped out. The Pasuk says in Chaf Vav that Yehoshua did not put his hand down until all the residents of Ai were killed. It's almost like Moshe Benu, his hand just outstretched throughout this entire process. And finally, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, we're told that they took the behemoth, they took the spoils of the city. Pasuk Chav Ches, Yeshua burns the city to the ground. He makes it a Tel Olam Shemama Ad Hayom Hazeh, desolate ruin till this very day. And the king of Ai is hanged until evening. At evening, he is then buried under a pile of rocks, Ad Hayom Hazeh. Okay, so concludes the story of the battle against Ai. And the Ramban himself, quoted in Sefer Mishpat Zov, the Ramban and Bishalach draws this parallel between Moshe holding his hands up throughout the battle against the Amalek to Yeshua holding his hand out, his arm out, throughout the battle against against Ai. Similar imagery in both of these stories. So now, we now move on to the postscript. Now, this story now that we're about to describe here at the end of the parak, Rashi tells us, really occurred before this battle we just described. Because the story we're about to read now is the story of Yehoshua building a Mizbech on Har Eval and taking these big stones to build the Mizbeach, and writing on the stones the Mishnei Toras Moshe. Writing on the stones the review of the Torah of Moshe, which Radak says means most of Sefer Devarim, was written on these stones. Now this really, says Rashi, happened right after the cross of the Yarden. Didn't happen now. Right, they crossed the Yarden, they did battle against Jericho, they did battle against Ai and lost, they did battle against Ai and won. This story of Yeshua writing the Torah on the stones that he uses to build the Mizbeach on Har Ebal was something he did way back when, says Rashi. He did this already right after he crossed the Yarden. It's written now, out of order. Now, why is it written out of order is a good question. But sequentially, chronologically, says Rashi, it happened before these battles took place. Now, why is it written out of order? Perhaps because it's meant to serve as inspiration for the Jews as they now proceed unencumbered in their conquest of Eretz Yisrael. What did the stones have on them? The Mishnei HaToras Moshe. They had on them, written or inscribed on them, a large segment of Sefer Devarim, which is the review of the Torah of Moshe. And the Radak actually quotes from Rav Sajigon that they wrote the list of mitzvos, like just like a list of mitzvos on these stones. This was meant to be an infusion of spiritual motivation when they went into Eretz Yisrael as they are about to now proceed with the conquest of the broader expanse of Eretz Yisrael. Mishpat Zav quotes Rabbi Rucham Lubavitz, Mashgiach of Mir, who cites the Gemara in Sota, which says that at the bottom of these stones, they wrote the pasuk Laman Asher Lo Yilamdu Eschem Lasos, that we don't want you to be taught by the nations living in Eretz Canaan to do like they do. Oh, as the Torah is being written here on these stones as you enter Eretz Yisrael, as a reminder, in order that you should not learn to behave and live like they live. The pasuk says in Parshas Shoftim, Laman asher lo yilamdu eschem lasos kechol toavosam asher asul alehem v'chatasim l'Hashem lokechem. I don't want you, says God to Bnei Israel, to mimic their behavior and sin thereby to God. That's why you got to destroy them. As soon as you enter Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk says, you got to destroy the nations living in Eretz Canaan, because otherwise you might end up living life like they live life, and you'll anger me, you'll sin as a result. So the Gemara in Sota says, on Daf Lamed Hei, Amid Beis, that in the bottom of these stones, they wrote the mitzvot on the stones, the bottom of the stones, they wrote this pasuk, like a reminder, don't be like these nations living here. These are the mitzvahs you got to follow. So Rabbi Rucham Lubavitz says this as follows. He says very beautifully. He says, when you walk into a store, so there's a sign in the store which tells you this store sells this product, right? You know, otherwise, you're going to walk into a store looking for stationery paper, and you're going to find only clothing. You know, obviously, every store has to have a sign in the store indicating what they're selling in the store. So when you walk in, you know what you're looking for. You know what you're buying. You know what you're getting. So Rabbi Rucham says, the purpose of putting these stones right there on Har Eva, when you walk over the Arden, with the inscription of the mitzvahs of the Torah on it, and this reminder, pasuk on the bottom, is almost like a sign as you enter Eretz Yisrael. This is what your goal and objective here is. This is what you got to do. The mitzvahs. Don't follow them. Don't listen to them. Don't be like them. The mitzvahs, one after the other. Here they are. This is your entry sign upon entering Eretz Yisrael. This is what you must remember. This is what life in Eretz Yisrael is all about. This is the significance, says Rabbi Rucham, of this sign, so to speak, the inscription of the mitzvos and the inscription of that pasuk on the stones, just as they entered into Eretz Canaan, on the stones that were constructed into Mizbeach on Har Eval. Now, the question that Mishpat Zav asks is, why put this Mizbeach on Har Eval? We know Har Eval was the mountain in which they recited the curses. Har Gerizim was the mountain in which they recited the blessings. Why would you put these stones, this Mizbeach, with the Torah mitzvot written on it, on Har Eval? Seems like somewhat incongruous. So he suggests, interestingly, that perhaps the lesson here is, yes, Har Eval represents the don'ts, the curses. Whoever does this is going to be punished. Whoever does that is going to be punished. Har Gerizim is the do's. This is what you'll be blessed if you do. But the purpose of putting the Mizbeach on Har Eval is to say you have to fight to overcome the temptations to do the wrong things. The Mizbeach symbolizes that spiritual battle being waged against the evil temptations of Har Eval, so to speak, because that's what's then going to enable you to enjoy the blessings bestowed by Har Gerizim. You know, the battle starts with the temptations to do wrong, and then you'll be zocha upon victory there to the blessings that follow from Har Gerizim. Okay, so the Psukim here describes the conclusion of the Perek. The Psukim describe how Yeshua then builds this Mizbeach on Har Eval. He inscribes on the stones the Mishnah Toras Moshe. The Jews stand, some facing Har Gerizim, some facing Har Eval. And then he calls out the Divrei HaTorah, the Brachos and the Klalos to all of Klal Yisrael. And so concludes Perek Ches with this now almost like infusion of spiritual purpose now as we're moving into the bigger battle for the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Now again, this event according to Rashi happened before the battles against Yerichonai. It happened upon crossing the Yarden, but we're writing it now, reiterating it now, because now it's now being put into action. Now this is what's the This is the spiritual driving force that's now going to motivate them as they embark on the rest of their battles for Eretz Canaan. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank everyone again for joining. Wish everyone a wonderful evening and a good rest of the week.